comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter, the show where minds are in gear and thinking is welcome. We're here because you have a right to know. Well, I hope you got in on last night's show. I can tell you that based on some of the email that I have received, you would think that I had blasphemed the Bible, kicked the Koran, and burned the Buddha. Yeah, some of the grand poobahs of the UFO community have really got their panties in a wad over that show and over the article that I published over at UFO Digest. As a matter of fact, Robert Morningstar, the editor of UFO Digest, has also been fending off the stampeding stallions of sanctimonious status quo UFO poobahs as well. Robert Morningstar will join me tonight as I ask an all-important question of the poobahs. Just who the hell died and made you God? If you have not yet signed up for our free weekly newsletter, you want to be sure and do that. That free weekly newsletter, ladies and gentlemen, is really packed with information. And, of course, the important word here is it's free, okay? It's not Washington, D.C. version of free with all kinds of strings attached. It's really free. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. So if you haven't subscribed, get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll find there the link that says K-Files, big link right in the middle of the screen. Click that and subscribe. Now, you're going to get a confirmation email, and it has a link in it that you have to use to activate your subscription. If you don't activate it, you won't be getting the K-Files. You have to activate it. Now, we do that to make sure we don't spam anybody, okay? So, like, if somebody just comes over to the site and they're going to play a joke on you and sign you up for our newsletter when you don't know anything about it, well, guess what? When they sign you up, you get an email from us one time that says someone, either you or someone using your email address, has subscribed to the K-Files. And if you really intended to subscribe, then we really would like for you to click this link so it will activate your subscription. If you do that, then you'll start getting it. Okay? And like I said, you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Our members area, we've got a brand new system for member support. It is a nice, sleek help desk system. And if you have a member support issue, you go to member support. And I know it's a novel idea for some folks, but that's where you go. And you put your information in there and tell us what's the problem, and you will get a speedy reply because we want to solve your problem.
Thank you.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said at the top of the show, my guest this evening is Robert Morningstar, editor of UFO Digest. Robert, welcome back to the show. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you.
Robert, at the top of the show, I mentioned that based on some of the email that I've received, you would think that I blasphemed the Bible, kicked the Koran, and burned the Buddha. With that show last night and with the article that you folks at UFO Digest published, the article that I wrote, having to do with the NSA documents that were released, and particularly one document. And I also mentioned that you yourself have been fending off some fireworks from some of the grand poobahs of the UFO community. Certainly not all, but some. Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting 24 hours, hasn't it?
Yep. Fireworks. Hey, you know, I'm hearing a big echo on this. Do you think that we could get a better connection?
I doubt it.
Okay. Well, I'll
we're not hearing an echo at all.
In a delay. The publication of the article on the NSA document has really caused a firestorm and a lot of controversy. You want to tell people about it?
Well, I can. Let me tell my side, what I've experienced, and then you can tell yours. First of all, I want to say I've gotten a lot of email from people who some were excited, some agreed, some disagreed, but they were all very civil, very, you know, I think it's this way, you know, I think you should consider this, and so forth. And look, that's great stuff. And the other stuff is great stuff, too, because it certainly gives me gunpowder for my own fireworks show, you know, whenever someone really becomes a loose cannon in the way they're approaching this. I've gotten some email from some loose cannons. And when I say grand poobahs, I mean people who are really second tier. I mean, if I name the names, people in our audience would know the names. And you and I know some of those names mutually, because you got some, I got some.
Mm-hmm.
They're really second tier. They're not top tier when we're talking about UFO research, UFO investigation. They're okay, but they're second tier. And one in particular that's been banned from this show. Little group of these, it's almost like they have dementia. And I'm not making light of dementia. I'm just saying that it's the emotional outburst and the response to what was not said as if it were said.
Right.
The same tactics that are used by lamestream media.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, my attitude about that with these folks is, and I want to say again, I'm not talking about people who posted in our forums or who sent me email and just, you know, you thought it was a different way than what we expressed last night or what I expressed in the article. That's just honest opinion giving and honest disagreement if you disagree, and that's okay. But I'm talking about some really radical people, loose cannons. And my question for them that I ask at the top of the show and I ask it now is just, who the hell died and made you God? Everyone in the UFO community is entitled to think, and they don't have to think lockstep. And if they don't think lockstep, and that puts these poobahs' panties in a wad, then I would suggest they need to go get some new panties.
You know? Well, I agree. It's hard to deal with these personalities, and any time that you get into a debate, they twist your words into the exact opposite. They're very skilled in neurolinguistics and neurolinguistic programming. So, and it's not worthwhile engaging them, because you only bring it, you know, attention to their neurosis in many cases, as you're discussing here.
Well, and that's why I'm not mentioning names. They don't. Yeah, well, now, if they want to pay me for advertising, I'll mention their names. But otherwise, they don't get a free ride here. But you actually have taken it on the chin a little bit with this, too, and you've gone out there and done some research. For those of you who missed last night's show, honest to God, my sincere sympathy, I am sorry. And for those of you who are now, you're not listening to it right now, but you're going to catch this in the morning, you know, and I'm not going to listen to it live. I'll watch it in the morning. You're not going to be able to watch it. The software's not recording. It won't record. That's why at the beginning of the show, it kept popping off air. Some problem in the software. Don't know what it is. We'll try to get it fixed later. But sorry, you get to listen, but you don't get to watch tomorrow. You get to watch live, though. That's working. But look, if you missed last night's show, oh my, you really, really missed trainloads of information. But Robert, what's curious to me is I spent 2 hours last night repeatedly saying, I could be wrong about this. I'm not saying this is absolutely the way it is. I'm saying this is how it looks to me at this point.
Right.
And we had a guest on, a guest with the credentials to comment on this documentation coming out of NSA, because he's one of the people that actually built the system, the protocols, the procedures for actually securing those pieces of paper. And has the classification, the exposure, and the experience to be commenting on documents coming from NSA.
Mm-hmm.
It was his opinion, and I asked him, you know, I stated this in my article, that I asked this guy, what do you think? How does this strike you? And he said, it's disclosure. That's what he told me on the phone. It's disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Pure and simple. It's there. He said last night, it might not be.
It's there to understand it.
Do what?
It's there for those who care to try to understand it, that it's not an overt action. It's just putting the information in front of your face, and if you can recognize it, there it is for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he said the same. He went along with the same vein as I did last night in saying, he said, look, you know, it could be something else. But the way it reads, you just take, you know, what it says, it just comes out and says there that we received 29 messages from outer space. And then this article that we focused on was an exercise showing how you build the key to decode the messages. I've been amazed at the number of people who have written emails and made posts focusing on the message instead of the event.
Right. The word exercise seems to have confused them. An exercise can be an exercise in real time and real data. And I went on to the NSA website and explored some more. And a part of the confusion has to do with the source of the signal and where this information came from. Now, there are two areas. One has to do with a scientist named Dr. Lambros de Calamajos, who in one of those exercises devised a system to try to conceive the encryption. It was reverse cryptology is what he described it as, to come forward with an idea for creating the key. The second one has to do with a later study on extraterrestrial intelligence in which Dr. Howard Campaign stated explicitly, recently, a series of radio messages was heard coming from outer space. The transmission was not continuous, but was cut by pauses. burned over again. The pauses show here as punctuations. The various combinations have been represented by letters of the alphabet so that the message can be written down. Each message, except the first, is given here only once. The serial number of the message has been supplied for each reference. So nowhere does he say that that information was made up or preconceived to give a test to cryptologists.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Right.
And
so there's an assumption that the word exercise means test.
Yeah, but now watch this. The exercise was the development of a key to decode. That was the exercise.
Exactly.
But the messages themselves were not the exercise. They received the messages. Now we're going to do an exercise to see if we can come up with a key to decode these messages. And how do I know that? Because that's exactly what the beginning of that article says. It's printed right there. Now, I pointed this out last night, and I got a few emails today where people said, well, I would have to see all of the whole document and everything before I... Okay, but look, you know, the source and authenticity of these documents is not in question. This is published by the NSA. Now, I also want to clarify one other thing. I had a very nice email from a guy in Spain, and he focused on the fact that, yeah, these three articles were unclassified. They were not classified. But, and I explained, that misses the point. The point is not whether they were classified or not, it's whether they were released to the public.
That's right. They were unclassified within the NSA. So if you were in the NSA, you could see them, but they weren't unclassified for the general public to see until the dates, as you have pointed out and others, 2009, even though they were declassified for the general public in 2004.
They were declassified, and they could have been released. On October the 22nd, 2004, they could have been released to the public, but they weren't. In 2009, they were released to the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act requester. But they were not released by the NSA to the general public until they put it on their website on April the 21st, 2011. So just because something is not classified, that doesn't mean you get to see it. I bet you, Lieutenant General Hayden, he is the head of the NSA, Lieutenant General Hayden probably has some scribbled notes in the top desk drawer, or maybe the right-hand or left-hand drawer. In one of the drawers of his desk, he's got some scribbled notes that have nothing to do with NSA business. They're not classified, and you don't know what they say. And you will get in one whale of a mess if you go up there and try to get in his office to read those notes. But they're not classified.
Right.
So, you know, the NSA, the CIA, the DIA, DEA, FBI, everybody in the alphabet, all have tons of documents that are not classified and not released to the general public. So this particular document was not classified and not available to the general public at the same time. It is now out there. People can go read it. One person said, well, I would have to read the whole document. Well, it's all there. Go read it. It is all there from the title right down to the last entry in the appendix. It's all there. Just go read it. It's published. And here's another thing, Robert. I've found people are not distinguishing between publishing and publishing. For instance, They say, well, it was published in 1969. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was published in the NSA Journal in 1969. It was not made public. It was published to the Freedom of Information requester in 2009, but not made available to the general public. It was published on their website in April 2011. So when we people start saying, well, you know, they published it back in 1969. Yeah, they did. In a document you couldn't go get.
Mm-hmm. For 40 years.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It was published in a magazine, an in-house magazine, that you can't go down to the newsstand and buy the NSA Journal. That's an in-house publication. And, you know, yeah, it was published in 1969. And so, one of the things that I've heard, and you probably have too, Robert, well, that's not new. That's been out there. Yeah, but it hasn't been in here where the public is.
Right. It's been, or it hasn't been recognized by enough people.
Yeah, it's been out there in the NSA.
I interject. A case in point is this burned memo from Robert and Ryan Wood. It came out in 2007, and my eyes jumped out of my head when I saw it that morning because I recognized that whoever wrote that knew everything. If people are trying to say that it's a hoax, but people don't understand what the document means. But the document shows that whoever composed it knew the Secret Service codes, code names for President Kennedy and Jackie as Lancer and Lace, knew about the existence of the 5412 Committee, which was the assassination committee that was organized in the 1950s in the Eisenhower administration, knew the lingo for assassinations. So I'm saying that people don't recognize, they don't have enough background to see the authenticity.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar, editor of UFO Digest. Robert, before we get too far afield, I want to point out one more thing that my email indicates, and you can fill us in on whether your email indicates this as well. People miss the point of what the disclosure is. People are so focused on the message. That's not the disclosure. The disclosure is that we have messages.
Right. The communications is the real disclosure.
Yeah. And, I mean, certainly, if they're going to publish any of the messages, which apparently they did, these are the messages that are not all that important. These are math, periodic table. One person told me there was no periodic table in it. Well, Mr. Campaign, Dr. Campaign, said there was. In that article, he said there is the portion of the periodic table that is the rare earth elements. Now, he said it was there. I've received a couple of emails from people who said, no, there was no periodic table in the messages. Well, Dr. Campaign said so in print.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is one of the problems. We are reporting information, and people think that we are the creators of the information and that we are in error. And what we're doing is quoting some of the highest-ranking scientists in the National Security Agency, exercising free thinking, mm-hmm. and conjecture and speculation and all of the useful tools that go into satisfying the curiosity of science.
Well, that's right. And, you know, if I point out that Dr. Campaign says X, and I show, as I put the links in our forums, I showed it on screen for those who are watching. I didn't make that up. That's what I put up on the screen is right straight from the NSA website. Mm-hmm. They published
that. And people are too literal. You know, they expected when you said the periodic table, they expected perhaps to go see there and see an exact table as they were exposed to in a chemistry class.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're looking for pictures instead of reading the article.
And they're not clear on the distinction.
Yeah, they're looking for pictures, and they didn't see a picture of the periodic table. I would assume that's the case. There's no picture of the periodic table there. You have to read the article where he explains decoding the message that the message was the periodic table, the elements of the periodic table, the rare earth elements. But you've done some additional research and digging, and you have found something I think is important. Another thing that happens sometimes, you mention A, and later in the article you mention B, and then the email response you get from someone who reads the article, or if not an article, I do that on air. I mention A, and then later I mention B, and they put the two together as one thing,
mm-hmm.
and respond to that. Sputnik is one issue. The messages is another issue.
Right.
Now, we mentioned that they did pick up signals coming from they were monitoring Sputnik. As they monitored Sputnik, on the edges of the frequency, there were fuzzy disturbances in what they considered to be intelligent, not intelligible, but intelligent patterns. And there were people that said, well, Sputnik was, you're saying that, I got one that said, well, you know, you made the claim that the aliens took over Sputnik and transmitted messages. No. Come on, grow up. I didn't say that. What I said specifically several times is at the edges of the frequency, as the frequency begins to fade away, at those edges, they were picking up intelligent disturbances as if there were another signal out there in space somewhere overlapping the frequency that Sputnik was transmitting on.
I think that's called multiplexing. My memory serves me right.
Well, in the NSA document, see, I didn't make that up either. I know people are used to getting UFO information out of UFO forums, and that's not always a bad place to get it, but sometimes it's horrifically bad. Mm-hmm. But I got that from an article published at the NSA website, and I think you read the same article, didn't you?
Right. Another false assertion that came in early this morning was that Sputnik only transmitted a signal and had nothing to receive. Later on, one of your listeners, sent in an information package from NASA showing that the Sputnik did indeed have receiving and transponding equipment, which is basically it was geared to go out there and receive cosmic radio signals outside the Earth's atmosphere and through a repeater or transponder to beam them back to Earth where they were picked up. So that contention that we were in error because of that limitation of the first Sputnik was not a valid one.
Mm-hmm. Have you been amazed at the swarm of hornets over this article?
Yeah, really surprising. Well, it seems to me that I have to warn everyone that there are out there UFO hit teams. That anyone who pops his head up and comes up with some information, they feel it their duty to debunk it instantly. Sometimes out of jealousy, and sometimes out of just their philosophy. They can't accept new information into their paradigm and their entrenched view of what ufology is and what UFOs involve. You get this often in people who have different philosophies about the nature and the true purpose of aliens and their intentions between the space brothers and the ones who say we ought to watch out for them.
So. Well, that's true, and I was just, as you were speaking, I was just thinking about the dichotomy within the UFO community over that issue, because I have it here on the show. I have people that come on the show, and everything they've got to say about aliens is they're a nasty bunch, and they're out to get us. Mm-hmm. And then I have people that come on this show, and they say all of the aliens are peace, love, and light. We need to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And I have said so many times, and I don't expect people to agree with this. It doesn't matter whether people agree. This is what I think, and they can think what they think. But I think the truth is neither one of those. I think the truth is a combination of both and everything in between. It depends on which alien and which group of aliens right. You're talking about.
There's a huge variety of alien races watching the Earth. And as I've pointed out on the show before, it makes sense to me that they would have interests, like in different kingdoms. You know, the so-called reptilians might care about what the reptiles' habitats are on Earth. And the Nordic, more human ones might be more concerned with human affairs and so on. So... to try to limit the alien activities into one concept or the activities of one race, it's too limiting. And the phenomenon is too varied to be constricted.
Have you ever had another article that drew fire like this?
Not in my recent memory.
Well, I'm surprised you were willing to come on the show then.
Was dealing with that story about the finding of the UFO that had crashed into the F-85 over Lake Superior.
Uh-huh.
And some guy said that he had sonar pictures of a submerged object that he thought was a UFO.
Mm-hmm, I remember
and,
that.
That guy, we've never resolved whether the story was true or not, because he came under so much pressure and threats from people who wanted him to divulge the longitude and the latitude of the location that the guy just disappeared. Was mm-hmm. never heard from again.
Oh, I had a threat today. I had a call today. I had a
really?
Threat. Yeah. And but you know how I respond to those. Hey, here I am. You called me. You must know where I am. What are you waiting for? An appointment?
Yeah.
You know? Do what you're going to do. If you feel froggy, jump. But
I haven't heard that one in years.
Yeah. Well, you know, I haven't said that in years. We used to say that when I was a cop. But I've been... I haven't been disturbed by the fireworks. I've been amused, a little bit amazed, and like I said, this second-tier bunch, this bunch, rising up in righteous indignation, has been comical.
Really?
You know? And like I say, who the hell died and made them God?
That made no sense. I had to tell them. I'm sorry.
So you've read
it's a tactic to draw you into firefights that always make you look bad.
Listen, I got one that wanted to pick a fight with me over the fact that I used the word flaunt when he thought I should use the word flout. I'm not kidding you, Robert.
That's really being picky.
Yeah, and I wrote back and explained why I use the word flaunt, although I don't normally respond to that kind of email. But I did, and I was polite about it. And he writes back, and he says, nice try trying to square the circle or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote back, and I said, look, I don't have time for these nonsensical arguments. Have it your way. It's been a while since I've seen such tidal waves of stupidity.
It would be good for us to really actually review the history of radio signals briefly from outer space.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the first ones that I know of are Marconi, the guy with the first radio. He picked up signals that he didn't understand where they were coming from, since he had invented the first radio. So who was signaling him? That was an unknown. Then in the 1890s, Tesla picked up signals that he then said were coming from Mars. Then Tesla went on with his research, his development of radio science, engineering, and in 1924 again claimed to be receiving signals from Mars. I think one of the coded signals that he took to be Morse code, if it were a Morse code word, came out as a W. And in that year, they devised a code to transmit back four letters that said Mars back to the Martians, the presumed Martians.
Mm-hmm. Now, look, that particular, that 1924...
That fascinates me, which is the story of the long-delayed echo, the LDE.
Yeah, but hang on a second. I want to drill down onto 1924 for just a second. In 1924, that situation was not just one person receiving it. The signal was detected at various points around the Earth, various receivers, and it was all equal intensity. We'll pick up there when we come back. When we went away for break, I was making a point about these 1924 signals because the article released by the NSA, it's on their website, says that it was picked up or intercepted from several points around the Earth, and it didn't matter where you were on the Earth, the intensity of the signal seemed to be about the same wherever you happened to be. So whatever it was not local. It was coming to the Earth from out there somewhere.
Right.
And that's important. Now, after that, you were about to tell us about another set of signals after that.
Right. The other set of signals had to do with the rebounding of signals that we were transmitting were bouncing off the moon and coming back to us. And since the moon is a known distance from the Earth, there's a certain return time that was natural. However, they started to hear a second return that was a delayed echo. First echo was directly off the moon, but something started to bounce back, a second echo that varied from one-third of a second to one-quarter second to one-third of a second in delay, which seemed to indicate over time that there was an object behind the moon that was moving and at varying distances was still picking up radio signals and bouncing them back to Earth. So this is one of those intriguing mysteries of the moon that led to more curiosity in having radio telescopes and monitoring radio transmissions in the lunar environment.
Bruce Maccabee, you know who Bruce Maccabee is, don't
sure.
you?
We just published a great article by him on the Battle of L.A. photograph.
Bruce McAbee commented on my Facebook about this NSA thing. Now, he's not one of the poobahs.
Right.
Okay? A poobah is someone who thinks himself great. Bruce McAbee is a very nice, down-to-earth, straight-ahead, straightforward kind of guy. And if he agrees with something, he says so. If he disagrees, he says so and says why. He's been on the show and has voiced difference of opinion about something with me on the air. But it's just very cordial and very professional. Mm-hmm. He's not one of these poobahs. And but he said, his comment on my Facebook page was, if these, now I may not quote this exactly right, so if the flout and flaunt guy is out there listening, you know, take special note and be sure you point out where I get it a little bit wrong, okay? But he said something like, the if these NSA documents are correct, they scooped SETI by something like 50 years.
Precisely. They do make a reference to Project Ozma and Frank Drake, and they specifically mention Tau SETI and Epsilon Eridani as these stars, constellation areas, that were the most likely areas of intelligent life. They used to be talking about Tau SETI and Epsilon Eridani all the time in the late 60s, early 70s, through the late 70s. That's all you heard whenever you heard Carl Sagan talking about intelligence or the possibility of intelligent life. And then all of a sudden, zip, that whole concept shut down.
Well, the guest I had on last night pointed out to me after the show that if you look up everything the NSA has on their website about UFOs, you will discover that Carl Sagan knew for sure that there was extraterrestrial intelligent life out there. He knew about the signals. But in order to keep his scientific funding, his grant money, had to assume the position of someday we may know, you know.
You know, ultimately he was blacklisted. He came, his end came when he started, let's say, conjecturing with the book Contact and discussing the kind of concept of interdimensional communications, interdimensional travel. And he pushed that, and that's actually what brought him into disfavor in NASA. He was going too public. So after all those years of debunking and, you know, being really, he was a very snide fellow. I saw him, one of the greatest episodes of The Tonight Show I ever saw was Carl Sagan, along with James Lovell, the astronaut who had gone around the moon, and Hickson and Parker, the fisherman who had been scooped off the dock in Pascagoula.
Yeah.
And they came, they told a story, you know, Parker, the older gentleman, Hickson, the older gentleman, told his story straightforward, so, you know, corroborated by the younger fellow. And then they had James Lovell, who just listened very respectfully. And then Sagan came out and started a tirade against them, you know, trying to make them sound, look ignorant and like dummies, and saying things like, I'll never forget, he said, why don't we ever lose, if people talk about the Bermuda Triangle and losing ships there, why don't we ever lose a locomotive in the Bermuda Triangle? And I jumped out of my seat and screamed, you idiot, there are no railroad tracks in the Bermuda Triangle. But at that moment, Lovell stepped in and he chided, he chastised Sagan. And he said, Dr. Sagan, I've been in outer space and I've seen things there that I can't explain. And I think you do a disservice to science because you betray a lack of the one thing that's essential in a scientist, which is an open mind. So I always respected James Lovell for having come to the defense of these two gentlemen in such a way under the attack from Sagan. But in the end, Sagan came around, you know. he redeemed himself with contact. And Richard Hoagland told me that in his last years that Sagan showed up at one of Richard Hoagland's lectures, and Richard, you know, after the lecture was greeting people, he felt a hand tap him on the back, and he looked, and he said, and it was Sagan, and he said, "You're doing a good job," and just congratulated him and went on. But that was his job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Philip Morrison, they were all in the know. And that was the and you know what? If I recall correctly, Eridani, Epsilon Eridani and Tau Ceti, they're not that far removed from that area where Zeta Reticuli is.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be a nest of intelligence out there in that sky.
The documents that the NSA released in this batch to the public. This is April the 21st, 2011, is when these were released to the public on their website. And that batch of documents is probably as close to disclosure as we're going to get. Some people think disclosure means the president or a general standing in front of a camera and saying, yeah, it's true, doorknobs exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's disclosure if they say, well, okay, here's the documents. And that's what's happened here. And I think if you read these documents and you take away all of the UFO religion and just read what it says, not what you want it to say, what you wish it would say, what would coincide with the book you already published. If you just let it say what it says, I think it constitutes disclosure. It's an admission that we have received signals from extraterrestrials, communications with extraterrestrials. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. And I wish you had been with us for the first hour, but we're glad you're here now. And my guest this evening is Robert Morningstar. He is the editor of UFO Digest. They published an article that I wrote, and as a matter of fact, Robert, you are very culpable in this. Because I could not get it to upload to UFO Digest, and so I just emailed it to Robert. I said, I can't get in and make it upload. And so he uploaded it for me.
I put it up, I published it, I edited it, I added images, I tweaked it a bit, it looked great, and a line from an old movie comes back. Here's another fine mess you've gotten me into.
One thing about it.
Anyway.
There's one thing about it. It's got to be generating some traffic over at UFO Digest because of the poobahs wanting to go over there. And
everybody's reading it.
Yeah.
And the more people read it, the more they investigate. It's remarkable. You know, one of the great advantages of such a thing is that people dive into the sites and they come up with other remarkable information that they send you. Send us, you know, our supporters, people who are on our side, and give us course corrections. You know, they know we're on target, on the right course, perhaps, and then they'll give us a little hint and guide us to even more important resources and information. I found that happened several times today.
Yeah, and I want to underscore again that when I'm talking about the poobahs. And the emails I've gotten from them, I'm not talking about people who write in and say, well, you know, I know you said it's this way, but I don't see it that way. I see it this way. That's okay. That's just a difference of opinion. I'm talking about the grand pontificators who are wannabes. They've got a name, but, I mean, if I say the name, you know them. But they're second tier, second rate. They're never going to be top rate. And the reason they're not is because of this kind of attitude they have. And they just get nasty about it. And they'll get even nastier now that this is out there. They'll never admit they listen to the show, but they do. They listen to the show. And now they'll get nastier. And so as they get nastier, they will, of course, be identifying themselves to the public as that's the poobah I was talking about.
Well, I find that a lot of these people have a lot of pent-up anger in them, and they need to discharge this energy, and they have pet peeves, and they want to be the only authority mm-hmm. on the block about mm-hmm. UFOs in this case, and that if you deviate from their party line, you know, you're either a hoaxer or you are insufficient in your sciences, or, you know, they come up with any kind of attack.
Yeah, you're flaunting when you should be flouting.
To get back to those signals, let's talk about, because there's a lot of interesting stuff. When you get into radio transmissions and frequencies associated with UFOs, there's a lot of fascinating information. One of the premier agencies is the U.S. Army Signal Corps. In the 1950s, they were in charge of monitoring UFO activities and signals, and they several times picked up signals coming from outer space, which they associated with the UFO fleets and the so-called motherships that were seen to enter equatorial orbits. The aircraft carriers of the flying saucers. One of the most interesting cases, I believe, was 1956 when an RB-47 reconnaissance, RB-47 was flying the Gulf Coast from Florida across Louisiana back to its home base in Oklahoma. And it was tracked by a UFO all the way, over 600 miles. The UFO was red in color, came up on its tail, and just stayed there. They were able to monitor it both on the radar of the RB-47, but the RB-47 notified Strategic Air Command, and so the UFO was monitored by all the Air Force bases along the coast from Pensacola, Florida, across Louisiana, and all the way back to the SAC base. And they found that the UFO was emitting a radio high-energy radio frequency, which was about 3 gigahertz signal. They were able to follow it all the way. And one of the maneuvers that this UFO pulled was the B-47 was doing close to 600 miles an hour. The UFO came up behind it, came up around the left wing, shot up in front of it, made a circle around the whole RB-47, and then when the RB-47 went to land, it just drifted off and away. But can you imagine making a full circle around an RB-47 doing 600 miles an hour? And that was one of the things that boggled their minds about the technology of these crafts. But for me, the interesting fact is the discovery of this, I think it was 3.2 gigahertz frequency being emitted by the UFO. And interestingly, about 3 or 4 years ago, I was doing a lot of research into the UN Committee for the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, had a meeting about the cataloging of UHFOs. I found out that the United Nations has a code word for UFOs, but it's not UFOs, it's UHFOs, and it stands for unidentified high frequency objects. somebody writes to the United Nations and asks about UHFOs, they might get a surprise. There's more information on that in the UN than UFOs. The other thing I saw is that in the U.S. Air Force, they may not spell UFOs as UFO as we spell it. I saw an in-house Air Force document reporting UFOs, and it was written Y-O-O-F-O-S, UFOs. So finding the right word, the right acronym, is an important element, like keywords and key codes. You have to figure out what their jargon is. So if the United Nations doesn't call UFOs as UFO and saucers UFOs, and you're right, I need some information on UFOs, we don't have any of that. But if you say ultra-high frequency, unidentified high frequency objects, then you're using the right jargon and you might get what you're looking for. So the language is the secret of the whole thing of data mining. And people who think in straight lines can't do that. You have to have an ability to associate, associative thinking, something that you look at one thing, a certain code, a certain phrase, and you associate something. You try it, and very often I've been successful in acquiring more information by that method than by linear thinking and straight deduction.
Well, I want to move away from the article and last night's show a little bit. I want to go back to something that you and I have talked about on this show in the past. You've told us about it, and now it's all back in the news again. People are sort of rediscovering it, and it's this memo about Kennedy... President Kennedy and UFOs.
Yeah.
And in fact, if memory serves me correct, and it may not, I'm an old guy, so my memory doesn't serve me correctly sometimes, I think you wrote an article about this.
Actually, I wrote a couple of emails to a special group of friends about it and how my background in the JFK assassination field gave me the background necessary to recognize this thing and the incredible significance of the information that's contained in it.
Okay, well, so, first, describe for us this memo. What is it? Where did it come from? What are we talking
Wood
about?
Robert has a source that provided him with what's called a carbon copy of a memo which was in a batch of files that was to be burned. And the papers were thrown into the fire, and this person, the source who saved the burned memo, felt his conscience drive him to reach into the fire and pull out this two-page memo and pocket it. He released it to Robert Wood, and in this memo, written from the Office of the Director of Central Intelligence in 1963, there's a clear message that Lancer has asked for information that that cannot be given to him. And it gives certain tactics to deflect his questions and to basically mislead him or just stonewall, not to answer his questions. And it's clear to me, having read so much on John F. Kennedy assassination, including William Manchester's Death of a President, which is the only place I knew of until recently, where the secret code names of the Secret Service for President Kennedy and Jackie were given, which was, as I mentioned, Lancer and Lace. And it indicates that Lancer is really being assertive and demanding these files, and they cannot be given to him. and that it might need the oversight of the 5412 committee. Now, these words mean nothing to anyone else except if you've studied the history of America's assassination apparatus, and that's exactly what it is. Special executive. You know, when you hear the word executive action, people think of an executive in some office, pencil pushing and giving an order. Executive means to execute. So these committees for executive actions were execution committees, primarily developed for killing people like Castro or the president of Honduras or Allende in Chile, you know, our own assassination squads. But in this case, 5412 was turned internally and directed to eliminate a threat to world peace. That's the way President Kennedy was described in a telegram sent to Roscoe White. If you know the JFK assassination case, you know about Roscoe White, an ex-Marine who was transferred to the Dallas Police Department 3 months before President Kennedy was shot. And the Ricky White story includes the story of a telegram his father had received that he was being transferred to eliminate a threat to world peace. And ironically, I'm sure that referred to President Kennedy. So the Byrne memo sheds a lot of light into another major reason for the assassination of President Kennedy, as it alludes to wet weather in Washington. And to those who know the history of assassination, as I do, and the jargon, as I was saying, there are key words associated in all fields of science, and matter of fact, assassination is a science. It's not a chance event, it's a science.
Well, yeah, the term wet work means assassination.
That's the code word, because you know the word liquefy, to liquefy mm-hmm. it, or liquidate?
Mm-hmm.
Liquidate somebody, yes, to turn them into a pool of blood.
Mm-hmm.
So wet works was the KGB CIA jargon for assassination, meaning blood will run. And if the weather is wet in Washington, it means something bad's going to happen there. So it was pretty clear to me that this was a pretty authentic document and definitely not a hoax. Because why put out a hoax that nobody's going to understand? You know what I mean?
It is well, yeah.
So abstruse, and you would have had to study intelligence work for so long that why put out a hoax that nobody's going to understand?
All right, now
so that's another reason that I really said this is the thing, you know, the Rosetta Stone. Yeah, I'm making that word up now. Rosetta Stone of the JFK assassination.
Okay, got a question for you here.
About Mr. Tippett.
All right, got a question for you.
Sure.
This memo is talking about assassination, but it's talking about it in with reference to the fact that President Kennedy was asking for information that he could not be given. How do we know that that's UFO information?
This is among the MJ-12 papers, so it's related to the subject of UFOs.
Okay, so he's asking for information about UFOs.
Yep.
And
then a series of tactics to deflect his search. From disavowing knowledge to just remaining silent and stalling, saying, I'll get to work on it. A series of ploys is what I would call it. It describes ploys for stalling him until they can dissuade him or eliminate him, I think. It seems to me, you know, I gave this story to Michael Sala, and he wrote it up, but he made a mistake in trying to assign the composition or the authorship of the Byrne memo to Alan Dulles. And he also transposes the writing of the memo way back to 1961. When you read the memo, you can see that this is clearly dealing with events of 1963. And from another memo that we that you and I both know, wherein President Kennedy sent his request to NASA Director James R. Webb, and at the same time notified the National Security Agency and the CIA that he wanted a joint venture with the Russians to the moon, and he wanted the reclassification of all unknowns into Air Force projects, Navy projects, CIA projects, so as opposed to all the other unknowns, so we could know which ones were ours, which ones were the Russians, and which ones were the real UFOs, the aliens. Now, that memo was very controversial, and a lot of people tried to debunk it as unauthentic, but the FBI released a bunch of UFO files within the last 2 weeks, and that memo is among them. So validating the authenticity of that memo, and that memo says Angleton has MJ executive, and it's dated November 12th, 1963.
Okay, I want to park right there and make a comment about that. This is important because there have been people who have been making a living writing books debunking the whole idea of MJ-12.
Mm-hmm.
Here you've got a memo released by the FBI.
Right.
That they've spent time debunking and saying it's a fake. The debunkers have, but now the FBI has released it, and there it is. It's real.
Now, here's the other point, and point well made on your part. The document validated by its release by the FBI has a reference on it to MJ.
There you go.
It says that Angleton has MJ executive. That means
James Jesus Angleton.
Authority on the subject. And it's my conclusion that the Byrne memo is actually written by James Jesus Angleton.
Mm-hmm.
And not by Alan Dulles, who had been fired already for over a year, fired in 1962, after Kennedy sacked. You know, Kennedy sacked like the top three guys in the CIA. And all of them kind of hovered around the assassination scenario, including General Cabell, who was a number three man in UFOs, U.S. Air Force general. And he was the brother of the mayor of Dallas. I mean, that's how literal the relationship is between the sacking of the leadership of the CIA and the events that went down in Dallas.
So he was the brother of the mayor of Dallas.
Yeah.
Would you believe I've met that mayor?
I believe anything. I know you've been around.
Yeah, I was a little kid. He came to our school and spoke to us one day.
Up and being there when that happened, so I know it's true.
Yeah, he came to our school and spoke to us. I was a little kid, but he came to the school and spoke to us and hung around and talked to us and, you know, kind of patted us on the head. Yeah, I met him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Eric, I think, was his name, but I'm not sure about that. But I remember Earl. Cabell.
Earl Cabell.
Mm-hmm. And they had a string of convenience stores, which they sold out to 7-Eleven.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know their background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we've got this memo that validates two things. It validates by being released in this batch from the FBI that it's real and that all those people who've, pardon me, made money off of debunking it, well, they're out of business now.
Well, they never really debunked it successfully.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff written about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this memo validates the reality of MJ.
Right.
Majestic.
Mm-hmm.
And Angleton has MJ executive.
Right.
That would mean he's MJ-1.
Yes, exactly. That's my point. Mm-hmm. He became MJ-1 in the after the exit of Dulles. Mm-hmm. And Cabell and Bissell.
Well, you know, Kennedy had a bunch of people who, for a bunch of different reasons, wanted him dead.
We don't have enough fingers and toes to count them.
Yeah, he was shaking up. You talk about change. Kennedy was shaking the ground underneath the entire nation. And some people think that was good. Obviously, some people thought it was bad. But he was excessively significant. You got the UFO issue. You've got the fact that he was going to defang the Federal Reserve and had ordered a whole big bunch of currency in Federal Reserve notes to be taken out of circulation, and the equivalent number of U.S. Treasury notes to be issued, which, by the way, the first executive order signed by Johnson reversed that.
Right.
You had the Bay of Pigs thing, so now you've got the CIA upset over that, as well as you have military people upset over it. I'm sure Castro wasn't happy with him. I mean, he just had a whole raft of people that wanted him dead.
Yeah.
Do you think that the UFO component in this is the lead component, or was there something else? And this was maybe just, let's throw that into the stew.
I think the UFO component was the straw that broke the camel's back. The retrenching on Vietnam, you know,
yeah,
saw that that was going to be a debacle. And he wanted to arrest our invasion of Vietnam, pardon the expression, and the military industrial complex plan to run the economy off Vietnam.
Well, and they did, too.
They did.
All right, we have a break coming up, and we'll get into this when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking this evening to Robert Morningstar. He is the editor of UFO Digest. And my little article has put him in the crosshairs for some of the poobahs in the UFO community. Only the poobahs, though. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Robert Morningstar. Before we get back into our discussion, I just want to make mention of the fact that just before showtime, I received an email from one of our listeners. Actually, I believe that listener is in Houston, Texas, telling me that there had been an earthquake registered in East Timor. I don't know how strong it was. I don't know if there was destruction of property. I don't know if there were casualties. I just know that there was an earthquake registered in East Timor. And I want to say to all my friends in East Timor that our hearts and prayers are with you. And I hope the very best for you. And as I have more information on that, I'll let you know. I love East Timor. It was a great place to live. And a tough place to live, but great people. All right, my guest, Robert Morningstar, we've moved away from the beehive that we stirred up, and hopefully I've stirred it some more, because as people act out, they expose themselves. So maybe some of these people will act out a little more and be a little more in public about it and expose themselves. We've moved away from that. We're talking about the UFO connection to the Kennedy assassination. having been confirmed now by the release of a document, or part of it having been confirmed. Let me be specific. Part of it has been confirmed by the release of a document by the FBI, a document that a lot of people have spent a lot of time trying to debunk, written a lot of stuff about it, made a lot of speeches, called into talk shows and vented about it, and how it's a hoax, but it's not. It's there, and it's real, and the FBI has released that now. And so part of that scenario is confirmed. Part of it. Now, Robert, you started to mention something about Officer Tippett a few moments ago, and I think we had to go to break or I ask a question or something. We got diverted. But Officer Tippett, for those who are not familiar, is he was a Dallas police officer. He was ostensibly killed by Lee Harvey Oswald after the assassination of the president. So now that we've made that identification of who we're talking about, go ahead with what you were about to say.
Well, I was just saying by association that the phrase, the Rosetta Stone of the JFK assassination, the thing that explains everything, I said that I was coining that in reference to the Byrn memo, but then I remembered that one of the Warren Commission counsels, Wesley Lieber, said Officer J.D. Tippett is the Rosetta Stone of the JFK assassination. He made that statement. It was very abstruse, very unusual. Nobody asked him what he meant, but it was recorded, and I came across it many years later. And to make the long story short, it was that Officer Tippett's body was used to fool the Warren Commission and the nation by substituting photographs of Officer Tippett and his x-rays and his body as that of President Kennedy's, because Officer Tippett bore such a close resemblance to President Kennedy that his friends on the Dallas Police Department used to rib him and call him Jack and JFK. So that, in a nutshell, is why Officer Tippett is the Rosetta Stone of the Warren Commission report. Well, I'm on the subject. Everybody argues about the Warren Commission report, and we really shouldn't even bother with it because it was a trash heap of history, a trash heap of disinformation. What we should talk about is the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which came to the conclusion that President Kennedy was killed by a conspiracy and that it involved organized crime. That's as far as they were willing to go in 1977, because if they pull back the curtain, who would they find behind the mafia mechanics but the military-industrial complex?
Do you know who Daniel Sheehan is?
Yes, I do.
He's
a respected investigator.
And he has a seminar or a speech, if you will, that he did at a conference where he explains who, what, when, where, why, and how on the JFK assassination in terms of the actual actors in it. Have you ever seen that?
An actual duplication of the event with that?
No. He's just explaining it all. Who was where and who was involved?
I've been on programs with Daniel Sheehan.
Yeah.
On the Gary Null show. Gary Null is a very well-known radio host and journalist investigator, and he is one of my closest friends in New York. And he was one of the first professional journalist that I told about the doctoring of the Zapruder film. And he came to my house in 1992, and then I did it frame by frame and showed him what had been done to all of us, because the Zapruder film is just a mass hallucination. It's like a mass hypnosis. He was able to understand it, and he gave me the springboard to get the message out and got me involved. Mm-hmm. The higher professional circles of the JFK assassination. So I was on programs with him and Fletcher Prouty and Daniel Sheehan, Jim Mars, all of us were working very hard to crack that nut, the JFK assassination conspiracy. You know, it's funny watching all the UFO experts, the poobahs, as you say, who have been very dismissive and derisive in regard to JFK assassination conspiracies, to be confronted with the burned memo. They don't know what to do. That's another firestorm that started.
Well, you know, Robert, I mentioned a moment ago about people that have written books about stuff, and now it's being blown apart by actual documents being released and so forth. And I made the comment that, if you just read the documents without your UFO religion sunshades on, the very same thing that they accuse religionists of doing with reference to, for instance, the Bible, they accuse them of making it say what they want it to say. The very thing that they accuse them of, they practice, but they do it with a religion of UFOs.
Right.
And,
what you call the true believer. He's found satisfaction in one view that explains all things to them, and they will not be shaken or stirred or educated. Dare I use that word? I educate myself every day. I try to.
Well, the unified field theory. You're familiar with the unified field theory.
Yes, I am.
The unified field theory has a name, and it's one of the poobahs. You ask any one of these poobahs, and they and their view is the unified field.
In a literal sense, each of us is living in our own. How we explain it to ourselves is a personal matter.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about a rock solid, concrete belief that their view is the view. And this is a problem.
They get quite hysterical.
Do get hysterical.
I won't mention any names, but there's somebody on this planet that thinks that Billy Meyer is the be-all and end-all of all messages from the cosmos and the only explanation for UFOs, you know? And it's that syndrome of the true believer and the bishop of that field of, it's in that way. They get their followers, and they become like church leaders, like bishops of a given topic.
Well, there's one who does that with his credentials.
The cardinal of the Maury Island sightings,
There's one that does that with his credentials from the military. And there's one that does that with his credentials academically. They're just a handful of them, but they're very religious about this. And anything that challenges that is non-approved thinking. There's not just one way to look at a situation. There are many ways to look at a situation. Some people look at a sandwich and they see the component parts. Other people look at a sandwich and they see the whole thing put together. Mm-hmm. Someone else looks at the sandwich and they see their waistline 2 weeks from now. But it's all still just the sandwich, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are many different ways to look at all of these things that we look at, and there's no reason, in my opinion, there's no reason to get this religious fervor up about any of this UFO stuff. It's interesting, it's exciting, but if it is, it just is. I mean, I think a Ferrari is exciting, but hey, it just is. It just exists. And, I don't believe in Ferraris. I know I have seen them. You know, but I don't believe there's no religion about it, and that's a balance that is so hard to find and so hard to strike that balance when we're talking about UFOs and extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm. You know, and coming back to the subject of ufologists having to confront the Byrne memo and the MJ executive memo of November 12, 1963, and the importance of UFOs and John F. Kennedy, it's kind of a reality check and a shock for everyone to have to confront the thing that they had most dismissed. Mm-hmm. I have a saying about the truth is seamless. You know, if you follow the truth, there are no breaks, no inconsistencies, no flaws, no fallacies, and no wrinkles.
Mm-hmm.
The truth, no kinks in the fabric of truth. And if you grab a thread of the truth and you hold on to it really and pull it and yank on and follow it, you will ultimately come to the same true, honest conclusions that someone else pulling on another piece of the fabric, adhering to that thread of truth, you're going to meet somewhere in the fabric of space-time and what we call the truth. And by the same token, when you find a thread of truth, as I did in, for example, the Zapruder film, and you follow it, you instantly recognize the flaws, the failings, the gaps in the information, the disinformation, the deception, the deflection. So, but it's important to just hold on and keep searching and keep expanding. So it's no big surprise to me. You know, I was one of those guys. But I didn't remember.
Were you?
When I was involved in the JFK assassination, my cousin, former lieutenant commander in the Navy, who had a lot of experiences in UFOs and knew of my experiences in UFOs, started to try to pull me into the UFO field back in 1992. And I ranted. I said, look, I want to have nothing to do with UFOs. This is the John F. Kennedy assassination. If I'm associated with UFOs, he'll think I'm...
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back in just a moment with Robert Morningstar. Welcome back. We're talking with Robert Morningstar, and we're on Final Approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. And, Robert, you were telling us how your brother tried to get you into UFO research, and you kind of ran kicking and screaming away from it.
Actually, that was my cousin. My
brother Oh, your cousin.
Got me into UFOs when he was abducted in 1962. But actually... it goes back to the 1950s when my stepfather, who was a merchant marine, told us about his UFO experience in 1948 sailing the Caribbean. No, this was my cousin Mark. And I remember saying, no, you know, people think I'm crazy, a fringe, I don't want this work associated in any way with UFOs, and look at that, you know.
And now here you are, editor of UFO Digest.
And 17 years later, I come to, you know, I mean, I realize that Kennedy was shot primarily for being too intrusive in the UFO issue when I discovered the Angleton MJ executive memo, which was way back, I mean, 1998 or so, I came across and saw the significance of it. So it's a long odyssey, and to come here, as I said, you know, the truth is seamless if you follow it, and here I am, JFK and UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal. You know, it's not a coincidence that this all devolved, the UFO issue and the killing of President Kennedy devolved around Dallas and the capital of oil, American oil, because the oil industry was involved in the UFO issue from the very beginning. If you recall, some of the stories about the Kingman crash and the Roswell crash. One was that a group of oil surveyors came upon one of the crashed UFOs first.
Yeah.
And investigated it thoroughly, clambered around it, got inside it, saw what was going on. And then the Army showed up, got them off the ship, and told them to keep their mouths shut. But who's going to keep his mouth shut, you know, about something like that in the good old boy community of the oil industry? So Howard Hughes and people like that were, and of course he was heavily involved in technology and tooling. So I think that Howard Hughes is one of the big behind-the-scenes players in the UFO field in those years from 48.
Well, you know, one you talked about Dallas sort of being a nexus for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key players, according to Daniel Sheehan, in all of this, was a man by the name of Clint Murchison.
I was just going to say his name.
Yeah, now Clint Murchison owned a ranch in Mexico where the assassins were trained.
Right.
He was the owner of the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, he was one of the three top magnates, H.L. Hunt, Sid Richardson, and Clint Murchison.
Mm-hmm.
Were the three bigwigs of the oil industry. And of course, you know, you didn't mention it, but another thing that Kennedy was going after was eliminating the oil depletion allowance. And ironically, that's what Obama is calling for right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, so it's really interesting as the tidbits finally begin to come out. People are finding that a lot of the stuff that they snickered at, a lot of the stuff that they ridiculed people for thinking or saying, by golly, it was right on target.
Yeah, that's why I call this release of all of this information in recent weeks, especially the FBI documents, reality check for everybody. How about the 8,000 cows that were sacrificed? That was the word they used. Did you see that memo?
Yeah.
8,000 cows in 1979, and the Carter administration went into a panic. It's a very, very complex and deeply occult affair. And the fact that they use the word sacrificed is frightening in its implications, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we live most certainly in interesting times, and I pointed out last night there are people who, when they have nothing else they can resort to, they can't say the documents are not authentic, they can't say that any of it is hoaxed because it's being released by the FBI, it's being released by the NSA. When they've got nothing left, they say, oh, that's been out there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed this out last night. I want to point it out again tonight. Air's been out there for a long time. I haven't noticed you running away from that.
Well, you can always say, well, why didn't you publish it first, you know?
Well, there you go. There you go. Or go get your own radio show.
Why didn't you tell me about it instead of me telling you about it?
Yeah. Okay, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to ask you... about the article again. I want to go back to the article that sparked the fireworks. It's been a while since you've had one that's done that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you fear these kind of confrontations?
No, not at all.
Doesn't bother you?
No. Well, the only thing that bothers me is when the people will impugn my motives or my methods, my science, my research,
mm-hmm.
you know, or and my motives, you know, saying I am a hoaxer, a disinformationist, a government agent, you know, they give you there's a whole litany, a standard litany of accusations, attacks.
Yeah, those go into my KMA basket. You have a KMA basket?
Yeah, well, you know, I've actually had emails from people that said to me, be careful with Kevin Smith, he's a military intelligence operative.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, I know he's got a lot of military intelligence, and we operate together, so...
Actually, I don't have any. I have zero military intelligence background. Zero.
Vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
Vacuum cleaner for the UFO information that that you're feeding it to some higher source.
Mm-hmm.
That was only once.
Well, for the paranoid out there, they do have counselors and pills.
Just kidding.
Yeah. No, but truly, I've got zero military background. I have never been military intelligence, never worked for them, never been military. And so,
but
you know,
you
people
serve.
That dream that up.
You did serve honorably.
Well, and in the international police.
That's what I meant you had.
Yeah, in the international police, which is part of the State Department. It's not the part of the military. All right, well, look, if you will, I want you to stay online with me for just a minute or two here as I bring this in.
About part two of the article.
Yeah, part two ought to be interesting.
We'll come up with a lot more as a result of the firestorm here.
Yeah, well, after taking another swat at the beehive tonight, perhaps there'll be some of these poobahs that will be more active in acting out, and that'll give me so much more grist for the mill.
Exactly.
Robert, thanks for being with us tonight. Stay on the line with me, folks. If you click his picture on my website, it'll take you to UFO Digest. That is a great website with lots of articles from lots of different viewpoints. And for those who are not accustomed to an open mind, beware. Don't go there, because you have to have an open mind to see all those different points of view. Again, to all of my friends over in East Timor this evening, my very, very best wishes for you. My prayers are for you. I hope this was not a destructive earthquake, but I was informed that you experienced an earthquake. And I just wish the best for you. We got a great lineup of shows all week this week. Be sure you're here for each and every one of them. Don't miss a single one, because if you do, you may miss a fireworks show. If you miss last night's show, you miss the fireworks. And my sympathy for you. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.